Good evening, everybody, once again, and thank you for joining us. As I said, I'm happy to be here from Camp Simcha, and I'm happy to be joining all of you. We spoke the last 2 weeks about issues regarding Emunah, and that's what we're going to pick up with as well this week. Next week, as the calendar has it, will be Erev Tisha B'Av, and I assume most people will be preparing for Tisha B'Av at this hour, so both Rabbi Hauer and myself will not have a shiur next week, but we will pick up the following week. People are often mistaken in the way that they understand and the way that they define the actual term and the concept of Emunah. So Rav Shimshon Pinkus, one of the great Balei Machshava of our generation, helps us identify what Emunah really is and what perhaps Emunah really is not. And he puts it in very practical terms. Writes Rav Shimshon Pinkus, just imagine for yourself that there are two friends, two very close friends, and one of them is struggling with Parnassa, one of them really needs help financially, so he turns to his friend and he asks him, would I be able to borrow $25,000? Can I buy $30,000? I just need money to get my business off the ground, to pay for the mortgage, for whatever it is, to pay for my tuitions. And his friend says, absolutely. You know, we've been friends for the longest time, and I trust you. And therefore, he lends him an exorbitant amount of money. Somebody else who's watching in the distance walks over to the one who lent the money and he says, you know, I understand that you're very close friends, but I'm just curious. How do you know that your friend is going to pay you back? Aren't you nervous? And he turns back to his friend and he says, look, it's impossible for me to really know. But, he says, because we have been friends for so long, I'm willing to take the risk. I believe that he's going to pay me back because we have a certain trust, we have a certain confidence in one another. And this is part of that friendship, this is part of that trust that we've developed over so many years. And the friend turns back to him and he says, okay, now I better understand why it is that you were so forthcoming, that you were willing to lend the money, even though you did not know, you trust, you believe. However, writes Rav Shimshon Pinkus, imagine somebody steps outside in the morning and turns to his or her friend and says, I believe that the sun is shining. Or somebody goes outside in the evening and says, I believe that the sun has set. That would be an inappropriate way to describe your reality. You don't have to say, I believe that the sun is shining. That is so obvious. That is so defined. It is so pronounced. You go outside and you see the sun shining, or you see that the sun has set. The appropriate terminology would be, I know that the sun is shining. I know that the sun is no longer shining. You don't say you believe when it's something that is so definitive, when it's something that is so clear. So therefore, Rav Shimshon Pinkus explains that often people have a mistaken understanding of what Emunah is. Emunah is not that I believe that there's a God in the world. There are some parts of our reality, there are some parts of the world that make it clear that there is a God in the world. It is so obvious to us that God provides us with certain things in our lives that we cannot deny. That is not what Emunah means. Emunah is the place which is beyond our clear and definitive understanding. Emunah is when we go beyond our intellect and we say, beyond what I can see with my own eyes, beyond that which is so pronounced in my life, now I can start talking about Emunah. And that is something that is so important for us to understand. The Medrash in Tehillim writes that David HaMelech prided himself over the fact that he believed in a God that was Roeh Ve'eino Nireh. He believed in a God that is able to see and experience everything that we see in our lives, but yet we are not able to see Him. Now let's go one step deeper. One of the most fundamental works in Jewish philosophy is the classical Sefer Chovos HaLevavos. It was written in Spain in the 11th century by Rabbeinu Bechaye Ibn Pekuda. In his introduction, he describes what he refers to as a very complex makeup of every human being. And he suggests the following. Ha'adam l'chubar minefesh, writes the Chovos HaLevavos. Man is made of two different components. Man is made of a very complex makeup. Number one, he's made from a nefesh, which means a spiritual, intangible, metaphysical side. And on the other hand, he's made up of a guf. On the other hand, he's made up of a physical shell of a body. And he then goes on to compare and contrast these two. Ha'echad nireh. One of these components of our makeup is apparent, it's visible, it's discernible to anyone who looks. V'hasheni, Eino nireh. The other component to who we are is camouflaged. It's concealed. It's ephemeral. You cannot notice it right away. Corresponding and parallel to that, writes the Chovos HaLevavos, we have an obligation to serve God in a very complex manner as well, in two different ways. What he refers to as avoda geluya, what he refers to as outward, external, observable service, where at the same time we have an obligation to serve our God, as he refers to it, with avoda sfuna, with an inward, with an internal and personal relationship that we have to him, that perhaps other people are not able to easily see or appreciate. What is the breakdown? Well, says the Chovos HaLevavos, we have many mitzvahs that we observe, that we perform, that are obvious for all of us to see. So for example, he says, we shake the lulav, we sit in the sukkah, we blow the shofar, we light the candles, we keep Shabbos, we wear tefillin, we wear a talis, we daven with our mouths. All these kinds of activities that we do are part of the avoda hageluya. Those are all part of our obvious and physical service to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What is the avoda hatzfuna? What is the hidden service to the Ribono Shel Olam? Well, says the Chovos HaLevavos, included in that is the following. Sheneyached ha'el b'liboseinu. That we need to believe that God is the only one who manages our lives and our entire world. Shena min bo uvitoraso. That we believe in Him. Now, what does it mean? You don't have to do outward activities to believe in God. That is something that is avoda hatzfuna. That is something that is internal. It's something that I need to think about. It's an intimate relationship. It is something that is so personal that I need to consider in my heart and in my mind. And the Chovos HaLevavos goes on and on to say that both of these perspectives are what make the consummate religious life. God expects both of us. The reason why He created us with two components to life, with both a guf and a neshama, with both a body and a soul, is because He wants us to serve Him in both of those ways. And what is demanded of that service is often a very different observance, is a very different relationship. On the one hand, we service Him with our guf. On the other hand, we service Him with our neshama. And emunah, says the Chovos HaLevavos, belief and trust and understanding and relationship with God is all a part of that category of the Chovos HaLevavos of our relationship that we need to build, not in our minds, not with our bodies, but rather with our heart and with our soul. In fact, the Rambam writes in the Mora Nebuchim that emunah is not an inyan ha-ne'mar bepeh, writes the Rambam. Belief in God is not something that we talk about, it's not something that we do any activity for, but rather he describes it as an inyan hametsuyer benefesh. It is something that has to become a feeling, an understanding, a relationship, and that is the way that we need to approach this whole idea of emunah. There is a well-known story about the Kedushas Levi. Kedushas Levi was Reb Levi Yitzchak Mibartitchev, and he lived in the late 1700s, he passed away in 1809, and the Levi, Rab Levi Yitzchak Barditchever, the Kedushas Levi, was known to be a very pious Jew. He was one of the great students of the Mezritcher Magid. When he got married, he traveled to Mezritch to go learn by the Mezritcher Magid. And his father-in-law was very disappointed. He was very upset. And the reason why he was disappointed is because he said, I thought my daughter married a Talmud Chacham. I thought my daughter married a young man who was going to be spending his time learning from the books, from the text, and now he takes off time to go sit by the Mezritcher Magid. What is he going to accomplish by sitting by the Mezritcher Magid? He was so disappointed, he was so upset. And when his son-in-law came back, when he returned home, he asked his son-in-law, what have you learned with the time that you spent by the Mezritcher Magid? Why did you go out of your way to learn from this great Hasidic Rebbe who really I don't believe is a part of what you need to spend your time being busy with? And he turned back to his father-in-law and he said, I will tell you. I went and I visited the Mezritcher Magid, and what I learned from him was that there is a God in the world. To which his father-in-law was so infuriated and he said, you went all the way to the Mezritcher Magid to learn that there is a God in the world? And he called out the housemaid and he said, let me ask you a very simple question. Do you believe that there's a God in the world? To which the housemaid said, of course I believe there's a God in the world. And he turns back to his great son-in-law, the Kedushas Levi, and he says, Even the housemaid who never went to any schooling, who doesn't have any background in Judaism, even she knows that there is a God in the world. This is why you have to travel out of state, out of town, to go learn that there's a God in the world. And the Kedushas Levi famously responded, she says she knows there's a God. I learned and I felt that there is a God. I live it. That is why I went to the Mizrich HaMagid. Because what I got from him was not that we speak about God, it's not that we talk about our relationship with him, but that we actually live it. Emunah, like the Rambam says, is not something that is spoken about b'peh, but it's an inyan hamitsuyer b'nefesh. It's something that we need to develop in our hearts, in our minds, in our souls, in our thinking of what that relationship really means to all of us and how lucky we are to be a part of this intimate relationship with God himself. One of the primary reasons, I believe, why we find it so difficult to properly observe this mitzvah of Emunah is because we're dealing with an entity, we're dealing with a God who is described as the Navi Yeshaya as a Kael Mistater. The Navi Yeshaya writes in Perek Memhei that God, when he describes him, is a Kael Mistater Elokei Yisrael. God is hidden, God is concealed, in some way God is obscure. There were blessed generations who had the very unusual experience of really feeling God in a clear and absolute and a very transparent way. They had an understanding, they had a perspective of God that we don't have. They knew what godliness was supposed to mean to them. As we're told in the Medrash, when the Jewish people came to Kriyas Yamsuf, we know that the Medrash says, Mashara Shivcha Alayam, Lora Yecheskel Ben Buzi Binivu Aso. What the simplest maidservant was able to experience when leaving Mitzrayim, when having the experience of Kriyas Yamsuf, that was something that was more transparent than any of the visions that the Nevi'im had in all future generations. And this is something that we yearn for. It's something that we wish for. We say it in Yedid Nefesh. Higale na ufros chavivi alai esuka shlomecha. We ask that God reveal himself. We ask that God expose his existence to us. We live in a reality where God is a kel mistater, where God is concealed, where God is hidden. And that makes it so complicated. In fact, on the occasion of Kabbalah Satorah, when we stood at the foot of Har Sinai, when God revealed himself to us, Moshe Rabbeinu, first the plan was that Moshe Rabbeinu would be the one to transmit the values of Torah to us. And the Jewish people responded, no. Ritzoneinu liros es malkeinu. The Jewish people said, we want to have a direct connection with God. We want to see and experience and hear his voice because we want to have that open and transparent relationship, which is why Moshe Rabbeinu later on in Chumash writes the same thing. Mi yitein. It would be a perfect world in Kol Hashem Am Hashem Nevi'im. If all of God's people were able to prophesize, if all of God's people were able to see God and experience godliness on a very personal level, that would be the greatest, that would be the highest level. Look no further than what the Navi Yecheskel describes. Unfortunately, we don't have that. And unfortunately, we don't have that depth, that insight, and that clarity, that vision that so many generations had. We don't have that relationship and the profundity of what the relationship really should mean to all of us. So much so that the Navi Yecheskel tells us that he recounts a conversation with God himself. And in that conversation, he writes, I'm just going to read it, Vayomer Elai, God said to me, Hare Osa Ben Adam, do you see the way human beings are acting? Ziknei Beis Yisrael Osim Machoshech, do you see what the people are doing in darkness of their homes? Ish Bechadre Maskiso, what people are doing when their doors are closed? Omrim, they're saying, Ein Hashem Roe Osanu. Well, God doesn't see us if we can't see him. And that leads them to the conclusion that Azav Hashem, it leads us to the conclusion that God has forsaken, God has withdrawn from this land. Later on, the Navi Yecheskel writes the same thing, Ki Amru, that there was an attitude in his days, Azav Hashem es ha'aretz ve'ein Hashem ro'eh, that God has left this world and he does not experience the world any longer. We have a right to act as we please. We have a right to do what we want because some people believe that God does such a good job at being a Kael Mistater, at being one who hides himself, that sometimes we don't even have the ability to see him any longer, to the point that we believe that he has abandoned the world. I saw a beautiful mashal from Shimshon Pinkus, where he writes in his Sefer that Take, for example, there's a great scientist, a great theologian, who goes to a village where they have a third world existence. And he says, he goes to see this, I don't know, say for example, this African tribe, and he gets into a conversation with them, and he's meeting with all the great thinkers of their community. And the truth is, they really are great thinkers, and they really are very intellectual people. And he's having a very nice conversation with them. In the middle, he gets a phone call on his cell phone from his wife back in America. And he picks up the phone, and everybody's staring at him. What is this man doing? Picking up some strange object, and now he's talking to it, and he's yelling at it, and he's making faces at it, and they cannot understand, and they're all laughing. And he turns to them and he says, "What is the problem?" And they look at him and they say, "Do you see yourself? We'll bring you a mirror, and you'll see how ridiculous you look. You're yelling at a little piece of something. We don't even know what that is." And he says, he's laughing back at them, "Do you not understand that through this small device, I'm able to communicate with people back in America?" And they say, "Are you insane? You don't really believe that that can be true." Then he goes on to convince them, "Not only can I talk to them, I can actually take a picture of you and send it back to my family in America, thousands of miles away." And they think this man has lost his mind. He's laughing at them. They're laughing at him. And he finally explains to them what it is that a cell phone represents, what this device really is. Till finally they say, "If you believe that there's such a force that's able to carry something all the way from a tribe in Africa that's living out in the forest all the way back to your family in America, if you're really telling us that you can send a picture, an image, all the way from here back over there, then show us where that force is." And obviously there's nothing to show. And Rav Shimshon Pinkus explains, does that mean that it doesn't exist? Or does it mean that the tribal understanding of these mechanics is so far removed from the reality? There's no way to explain it to them. It will take years of explanation to begin to get them up to speed of the reality that is being experienced now for the first time for them. Well, from there, says Rav Shimshon Pinkus, we learn not every force in the world needs to be visible. We know that the force of gravity is something that's very powerful, but it's something that we cannot see. We know that there are many forces in the world. We know that there are many great things in the world that come about if you just have an understanding of the science, if you have an understanding of what it is that you are experiencing, you no longer have questions as to whether or not it exists. And the problem, writes of Shimshon Pinkus, is when we sometimes get into the conversation of faith, of belief, of emunah in general, the problem is we are like that tribe living in the African desert or living in the African forest somewhere that has such a misunderstanding of what this simple device to all of us is and what it represents. They have no understanding of even the beginnings of what that is, even the beginnings of the power that are latent in there. And therefore, he says, as much as we can try to explain it to them, they'll never understand. Emuna means there is certain parts of our lives and the relationship that we will have a very good explanation for. Why is it that certain great things happen to us in life? We all know it's because God gave it to us. How else could it be that we have such a beautiful world? How could it be that the science of our world just works so seamlessly, that everything seems to go exactly the way it's supposed to, that the sun never gets off its track, that the moon always comes out when it's supposed to, that all the galaxies, that everything just seems to be working in tandem? We all understand that is because of God. Ru'u mi bara eila. That's not emuna. That's not emuna. That's something that we feel is tangible. That's something that we feel we can relate to. Emuna is the step beyond that. Emuna is when we have to say, "I believe and I trust because I don't know with certainty, because I have questions, because I have doubts, because I have certain things that I do not fully understand and I cannot relate to." And this is the way that God set up our world. He chose to be a kel mistater, like the Navi Yeshaya says. God chose to be a hidden and concealed entity in our lives. And the question that we ask ourselves is, why did He set it up that way? If sometimes it even leads human beings to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Azav Hashem Es Ha'aretz, like the Navi Yechezkel writes, God has abandoned, has forsaken the world. If that is what people feel, then why did God set it up in this way? Why didn't God choose to do it differently? Why didn't God reveal Himself to us the same way He did in a number of generations along the way? So in order to explain this, there's a beautiful piece from the Bala Tanya where he gives an interpretation as to why it is that God set it up deliberately this way and why he chose not to have a direct revelation with us at all times throughout these many, many years of our experience in exile, of our experience in Galus. And this comment of the Bala Tanya is a powerful one. And just lesaber as haozen, to make it a little more tangible for us, there was an article that I read a number of years ago that I think really relates to this point very beautifully. And the article reads as follows. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but the title of the article was, "Does Distance Really Make the Heart Grow Fonder?" This is an article that was published in September of 2013. So I'm going to read just a few excerpts from the article. The end of summer doesn't just mean it's time to buckle down at work or head back to school. For many college students, autumn also signals a disruption in summertime love. In other words, a return to the dreaded long-distance relationship. But are these types of relationships really so hard? Or as a recent study suggests, does absence truly make the heart grow fonder? According to some estimates, up to 75% of college students have engaged in a long-distance relationship at some point, and up to 25 to 50% of them are currently in one. But long-distance relationships are not just for college kids. Surveys show that about 3 million American adult couples live apart as well. And this is a fascinating scientific study that they did, where they describe the nature of long-distance relationships, which, by the way, in Judaism we refer to as Taras HaMishpacha. That's what the essence of Taras HaMishpacha is. It's a long-distance relationship. So listen to what they write. Long-distance couples felt more intimate with each other than did couples who saw each other all the time. Long-distance couples said that they felt more committed to each other, even though 30% of them only got to see each other once or three times a month. Mark Kristen, the director of Health Promotion Lab at the University of Kentucky, writes, "Sure you miss your partner," and here's the key line, "sure you miss your partner and you ache to see them again, but that ache is exactly what fuels the desire and the passion in the relationship. I believe that long-distance relationships may actually offer a valuable lesson for the rest of us. Putting some distance in your relationship can be helpful, even if you aren't in a long-distance relationship," which once again, the scientific study showed, that is Taras HaMishpacha. You can be with each other, you're not long-distance physically, but a long-distance relationship is very important. It allows for you to miss one another and realize why you've got each other in your lives in the first place. So ask the Bala Tanya, why did the Ribono Shel Olam set up the system that he is for us a Kel Mistater? Why does God choose to hide himself? Wouldn't we have a more deep and clear understanding of our relationship with him if we were able to see him with transparency, if we were able to experience him with lucidity, the way that so many generations before us have? And explains the Bala Tanya in his words, "Ki amnam ha'av tzarech lihisaser mipnei beno, kidei shehaben yirtza lechapes acharov, ukidei shetisor alav tshuka." A child who lives at home does not appreciate how much their parents do for them. And sometimes the child goes to sleepaway camp. Sometimes the child goes to a dorm school, goes away to seminary for the year, goes away to yeshiva for a year, has an experience outside of the home, and that often is what brings about a sense and a feeling of longing, of pining, of urge, of passion and excitement for the relationship that they always had with their parents, for the relationship that they always had with their loved ones. But sometimes that's what it takes. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu set it up specifically in this way, because otherwise he was concerned that there would not be a sense of longing. There would not be a sense of yearning. We would not have that passion for understanding and seeking out HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And in fact, we know that this is the way it works in all of life. That which to us becomes so conventional, which becomes expected, we lose appreciation for. We become almost indifferent to it. So much so that the Navi Yechezkel describes what happened. You know, we're in the 3 weeks and the 9 days, and we think a lot about the Beis HaMikdash, or at least we're supposed to. And the Navi Yechezkel writes, "Ubebo am ha'aretz." What was the experience like when we came to a Beis HaMikdash? What was that experience described as? And the Navi Yechezkel writes, "Ubebo am ha'aretz lifnei Hashem b'moadim." when there was a person who came to visit the confines of the Beis HaMikdash on the holidays, Haba derech shar tzafon lehishtachavos, when somebody would come in from the northern side, they would exit from the opposite, from the southern side. When they came in from the east, they would exit from the west. And the question is, why? One of the commentaries says the reason why is because you can be having such an uplifting moment, visiting God's own palace, visiting God's home in Yerushalayim, an experience that you only have 3 times a year, and yet, if you go in the same entrance that you came in, if that's the way you go out, it's so easy to become detached from the experience. I was here already, not so exciting. And I become indifferent to how special this time and this moment is. How often do you see that people who get used to any experience in life, it can be the greatest of experiences. Once they do it, not so exciting anymore. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, that is why we need to feel that sense of excitement. We can never be apathetic or lethargic to the way that we relate to God or the way that we relate to His Beis HaMikdash. Writes the Baal HaTanya, that is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu specifically set it up in a way that we are distant from Him. That is why He chose to be a Kel Mestater. Not because Chalila Azav Hashem Es Haaretz, it's not because God decided to forsake His land, it's not because God decided to withdraw from humanity, but rather because God wanted us to have this deep-seated longing. God wanted us to always feel this sense of passion, this sense of excitement in looking for Him, in searching Him out, and in appreciating what it means to be in that relationship with Him. Shir HaShirim, as we know, is written by Shlomo HaMelech. That's the opening line of Shir HaShirim. Shir HaShirim Asher LeShlomo. And in it, he describes a mashal. In it, he describes a portrayal, an illustration of sorts, of what it means to be in a deep relationship and partnership with God. What does it mean to have an unbelievable affinity and love to God? That is what all of Shir HaShirim tries to give us an illustration of. And in the middle, we're talking about a hysterical woman who is so distraught. She's running around the city frantic, searching for her husband because she desires him so much. She thinks that he came to visit her. She thinks he came back from a business trip. She thinks that she missed the opportunity. And now she feels that she has been deserted. Now she feels that she has been abandoned. She feels that she missed her chance to reunite with her husband. And this is all she wants. And we're told in the Psukim how she does everything in the world to try to locate him, and she asks every person she can come across in the street, Hagidani, could you tell me where is my husband? And I'm looking for him frantically, until finally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers. The Ribono Shel Olam himself, who is our spouse, who we are frantically looking for, the Ribono Shel Olam tells us, Hineze omed achar kasleinu, mashgiach min hachalonos meitzitz min hacharakim. God stands behind the wall, and he looks out from a window, and he peeks through a little crack in the wall. And that is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds to us, as we are frantically looking for him. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, what does it mean? Mashgiach min hachalonos, meitzitz min hacharakim. What is the difference between a chalon? What is the difference between a window and a crack in the wall? Explains Rabbi Yisrael Salanter very simply. When you have a window, there is complete transparency. I look at you, and in return, you look at me. I see everything you're doing. You in return can see everything that I'm doing. It's a window. On the other hand, when you have a crack in a wall, when you have a peephole in a door and you want to look outside, it's designed in such a way that I am able to look out from where I am, but somebody in the distance cannot see me looking at them. Somebody in the distance is unable to realize that they are being watched. That is why we have it on our door, in order that we can see out in the distance what it is that stands outside of our doors. Explains Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, this is an accurate description of what our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is all about. There are generations where we frantically look for Him, but God is mashgiach min hachalonos. God is looking directly at us from a window, which means we can see Him. It's transparent, complete transparency. There is nothing ambiguous about that relationship. There are other times where we understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still in our lives, and He is the major force in everything that our lives represent. But our perspective of Him is, Meitzitz min hacharakim. He obviously stands behind and watches over us. but he is peeking through that hole and we are unable to see him watching. And we get that feeling, Azav Hashem es ha'aretz. We get that feeling sometimes that God almost has abandoned and forsaken his world. He is such a kel mistater. He makes himself so invisible. He makes himself so concealed, so hidden, that at times we don't even remember that he exists at all. And what is the ultimate response in Shir HaShirim? What are we told in the end? HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls out to us and he says, Hashmi'ini es kolech, ki kolech arev umarech na'eh. God calls out to us and he says, I understand that you are yearning for this relationship. I understand how badly you want it. Let me hear your voice again. Remember that loving voice when I used to hear you when we first got married. When I heard you at Har Sinai. When I heard you declare Naseh v'Nishma. When we heard the Ribono Shel Olam say, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. When we pledged our allegiance to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and he pledged his full and complete allegiance to us. Hashmi'ini es kolech. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, we are lovers of one another. And sometimes we're in what we refer to as a long-distance relationship, but God says he wants to hear our voice. Rav Asher Weiss told me a few weeks ago, when we were still not yet back in the shuls, he said, you know, Hashmi'ini es kolech obviously is a reference to God saying he wants to hear our voices in prayer. But there are different experiences of God hearing our voices. Sometimes you have a choir, and you have many people singing together. And it's a little bit difficult to appreciate the individual voice of one of the members of the choir because they get drowned out in the symphony that you hear from the whole group singing together. There are times in life when God says, I want you to sing with the choir. There are times when God says, Hashmi'ini es kolech, I want to hear you solo. I want to hear your beautiful voice. And at moments like that, the Ribono Shel Olam says, I understand. Maybe you're unable to be with the community. Maybe davening is not the same as it always was. Maybe you're not going to have a packed shul where you have an entire symphony orchestra playing music to the Ribono Shel Olam, all singing together and drowning each other out. But we have an unbelievable opportunity. Opportunities of loneliness sometimes give us the chance to sing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashmi'ini es kolech. The Ribono Shel Olam says, there's nothing more that I want right now than to hear you sing solo, to hear your beautiful voice, and to connect with you individually. So that is what we mean when we refer to God as a kel mistater. In no way does it mean, when we say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hides himself, in no way does it mean that he is not involved in our lives, or that he is not involved in the world that we inhabit. What it does mean is that we need to work hard to find him. We need to work hard to understand him. We need to work hard to discover and to make real meaning out of what that relationship is supposed to mean for all of us, what its significance is, how powerful the force is. Just because God is a roeh ve'eno nireh, just because God is able to see us and we are unable to see him, just because this is a force that is not tangible physically, does not mean that the force does not exist in the world. We believe in that in so many other areas of life. We believe in that, as we said, when it comes to gravity, when it comes to so many scientific realities that we are aware of. And yet, when it comes to our Emunah HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it takes a tremendous sense of faith for a person to be able to say, Emunah begins sometimes where my intellect ends. Everything before that, we don't need to say, Ani Ma'amin. That is fact. That is proven. That is visible. When we need to jump in and say, Ani Ma'amin, when do we say that I believe? It's at those moments, it's at those junctures of our lives that we cannot always see tangibly, that we cannot always have answers for, that we cannot always clearly understand. So that is the discussion for this